아디지 쇼게 주린 디게 당은데 또 상보다 아니 내게 위신이 야다고 시대지 아니 이제 좀 봐 남기에는 그런 것도 두지네 아니 냠면 나지 아니 즉 되네게 기회신 때야 되게 랑기 소래 아니 자치와시시 때에 두지네 냠면지 이 나아레스 나니 하나도 이네 아니 이제 좋은 봐 이제 봐다 अनेक चीजें जो अनेक संबोधित हैं तादेने किसी यंग तबारों से यंग तो इन्हें जैसे जो समो कहाँ तो कि तो स्नावना सीन जैसे तो ये अनेक यंग में गांठों के ऊपर ऐसे जैसे दिखावे किसी तरह से होगा।
This morning we spoke about wholesome friends and in particular the virtuous friend. So we've spoken about, on one hand, to abandon unwholesome friends or to separate ourselves from unwholesome friends. And wholesome friends, in particular the virtuous friend, this is someone that we should rely on. And relying on the virtuous friend will lead to the development of Dharma minds. This comes about through having faith and respect in the teacher, and thereby applying the teachings or studying and meditating the teachings one receives from one's teacher, and in that way one grows and develops. So for this reason, the relationship with the virtuous friend, relying on the virtuous friend, is said to be the root of the path. So now the presentation will continue and continue with regard to what is the bodhisattva practice that is common with the practitioner of small capacity. The practice of refuge, this is presented actually in the Lamrim in terms of all three scopes. So there's the presentation according to the being of small capacity, of middling capacity, and the presentation of refuge according to the being of greatest capacity. Amongst the three different ways of that refuge is presented, so the first is for the being of smallest capacity or small scope. So the being of smallest capacity, they don't have as a motivation the attainment of Buddhahood or the attainment of liberation. Rather, out of fear of the torment of the lower realms, they think about their next life, and of fear of the suffering that will befall them should they happen to fall to the lower realms. They go for refuge to the Buddha with a mind of faith in the Buddha, that the Buddha has the power or has the ability to protect them from from falling into the lower realms. And so, in other words, they go for refuge to the Buddha with a motivation to achieve a good rebirth in their next rebirth, to attain a rebirth of a human or as a god, and thereby to be protected from the torment of the suffering of the lower realms. That is the refuge of a being of small capacity. The being of middling capacity, they too go for refuge to the Buddha, but their motivation for going for refuge is different from the being of smallest capacity. So the being of middle capacity has the recognition that in this life they have attained a human rebirth, and but this rebirth that's in the happier realms, that of a human or a god, whilst it doesn't have the intense suffering of the lower realms, yet this rebirth is certainly not free from difficulties and sufferings. Rather, suffering upon suffering is experienced even with a good human rebirth. So understanding that this goal, this attainment of the goal of the being of small scope, doesn't liberate one from suffering at all, but one stays bound within samsara. They turn their minds towards liberation from samsara, to break themselves out of the cycle of suffering, and this constant circle of meeting difficulty upon difficulty upon difficulty. So when they go to refuge, they also look for who has the ability or who has the power to protect them from this continued uncontrolled rebirth within samsara. And having faith that the Buddha and the Buddha Dharma can do that, they go for refuge. So refuge with such a motivation wanting to be free from the sufferings of samsara in its entirety, such a person is a being of middle capacity or middling capacity, and they go for refuge with such a motivation. And the third type of practitioner is called the being of greatest capacity. So this is the being of the Mahayana. So such a person, when they go for refuge, they too have thought about the motivations of the beings of smallest and middling capacity. But they see that, like the being of middling capacity, they see that attaining a good rebirth, a rebirth that's not in the suffering realms, whilst this is important and desirable, that is a very small attainment. And they see, like the being of middling capacity, that wherever one is born within samsara, one remains trapped with uncontrolled suffering, or suffering that one cannot truly protect oneself from. So they, like the being of middling capacity, want to bring this process to an end, this uncontrolled rebirth in samsara, where one meets suffering upon suffering upon suffering. However, what differentiates themselves from the being of middling capacity is they have the understanding that not only do I myself have this wish to be free of suffering, but each and every single being, they too have this heartfelt wish to be free of all forms of suffering, to be liberated from this circle of samsara, or the cycle of samsara that they are now trapped within. So understanding how all sentient beings have this wish to be freed of suffering, they turn towards the three jewels, confident in knowledge that the three jewels have the power and the ability to lead all beings to the state of enlightenment, the state completely free from all suffering. And with that faith and confidence, a being of great capacity goes for refuge. The person aspiring to attain the bodhisattva path and the bodhisattva themselves, to attain such a refuge, the refuge of the great scope, the refuge in the Buddha, with going to refuge to the Buddha with the wish to attain full and complete enlightenment for themselves and all sentient beings. For the practitioner to reach such a state, they first need to train in the refuges of the other two scopes. So someone who aspires to the bodhisattva path, they need to train first in the refuge of the lower scope, of the smaller scope. Then they also need to train in the refuge of the being of middling capacity. And in fact, this sequence is similar for being of middling capacity. They too need to first train in the refuge of the being of smallest capacity. So the beings who go for of the beings of a greater scope, they need to train in the refuge of all the preceding of the other stages as well. And so for this reason, a bodhisattva with the bodhisattva aspiration will also train in the refuge of the being of small scope and the being of middling scope. But they will be doing this with a motivation for enlightenment. So even though they train in these lower practices, their motivation is different. They still hold the wish for full enlightenment. So therefore, they are not going to the refuge or practicing the refuge of the being of smaller scope, but rather are training in harmony with the refuge of the being of the smaller scope and the middling scope.
Mundi,
It's the same with worldly education. If when a young child, when they go to school, if they don't have establish a good foundation, being able to read and write and get their early years well, then when they come to their middling years at school, they're going to really struggle because the basis hasn't been laid. And similarly, when you get to the higher stages within one's high schooling, if the preceding years one hasn't studied well and developed oneself well, then one's high school will not be completed well. One's education at high school will not be completed well. And similarly with higher education as well. So there is this this graded progression where the preceding stage, or the later stages, are dependent on the preceding stages being well accomplished.
And
similar to the process in worldly education, it's the same here with the practice of refuge. So when one may have the aspiration for the bodhisattva paths, that when one starts to think starts with one's contemplation on the foundation topics. So for example, one will first contemplate the topics of the being of small scope. So just thinking about, for example, the sufferings of the beings in the hell realms, the suffering of the beings in the preta realms, and the suffering of animals. And so contemplating on those sufferings, then the wish to be protected from that, the wish to go for refuge, the wish to go to a safe refuge will arise. And that is the understanding of the refuge of the being of small scope. So when that foundation has been well established, then the practitioner takes their object to a higher level, to a subtler object, and they now start to think about the refuge of a being of middle scope. So here the object is quite a lot more subtle, and they think about how all our aggregates are contaminated, so our aggregates are in the nature of suffering. So that is a much more subtle object than the object of the than the objects of the being of small capacity. So when the person aspiring for the bodhisattva paths meditates on the refuge that's common with the being of middling capacity, they meditate on the suffering nature of all the contaminated aggregates. And think, once that understanding has come about, they are then and only then ready to progress to the understanding of the great scope, or to the objects of refuge for the great scope. Because it's only when the person who is aspiring for the bodhisattva grounds or bodhisattva paths, when they can understand suffering very well and how and the pervasive nature of suffering, will they come to understand the situation that each and every ordinary being finds themselves in. So they'll come to understand their own suffering in detail, and by understanding their own suffering in detail, they will be able to understand the suffering of others. And then, with this basis, it will be much easier to accomplish the great scope refuge, because they will be understanding the suffering that they themselves in, and each and every sentient being is in, then the minds of love and compassion will come about well, and therefore the great the refuge of the beings of great scope will come about well.
Mm. 那让让可以等着金巴一今天来还有事情叫把你是这些看来将来迷路于工作能接着这些哪里意思。
Now we come to this practice, the seventh of the bodhisattvas, and that's taking refuge in the three jewels. Bound himself in the jail of cyclic existence, what worldly god can give you protection? Therefore, when you seek refuge, take refuge in the three jewels, which will not betray you. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. Starting here with the first two lines of the verse, bound himself in the jail of cyclic existence, what worldly god can give you protection? So in the different traditions of the world, there are many gods, and gods which were famous in their traditions. And those gods may well have powers such as clairvoyance and a body made for of light, a radiant body, and the like. However, such gods, they too, like us, have been born due to contaminated karma and afflictions. And therefore, they are worldly gods. And because they are born from due to contaminated karma and afflictions, born in this uncontrolled manner, that they too are bound within suffering. They are bound within samsara, and they too are suffering within samsara. And if they themselves, whilst having powers and abilities, but if they themselves remain trapped within samsara and unable to free themselves from samsara, then how can they liberate anyone else from samsara? And that's, so despite having some powers and clairvoyance and the like, because they remain trapped in samsara due to being born, due to contaminated karma and afflictions, they are not able to lead anyone else, not even themselves, from this state of samsara. So we see here in the first line how cyclic existence is likened to a jail. So if we find ourselves trapped in a jail, then whilst we may have a cellmate, and maybe that cellmate is big and strong, it's very difficult for them to help us be freed from this position of being trapped within prison. Rather, if we have help from someone on the outside, then it is a lot easier to escape the bondage of being in prison.
Mm-hmm. jabne tartu ba de milu milu wa de ji dan gonjo sum gi jabne jab tu gure ji da ne ga wa la jab su du gure sin gonjo sum na jab su du gure ji.
So seeing how worldly gods actually do not have the ability to liberate us from suffering, then who does? So the three jewels, they have the ability to liberate us from suffering. They are undeceivable objects of refuge, and moreover, they are the ultimate objects of refuge. And the three objects of refuge are the Buddha jewel, the Dharma jewel, and the Sangha jewel. So let's look then at what these three objects of refuge are, these three jewels. So just to present it in brief, first of all, the Buddha is the teacher, the Dharma is the actual refuge, and the Sangha jewel are our companions. So the Buddha is the teacher of the Buddha Dharma, hence he is seen as the first jewel. Then the second jewel, this is his teachings, because the Buddha doesn't have the ability just to release us with his wish from the sufferings of samsara. Rather, the method for us to be liberated from samsara is for the Buddha to teach his teachings, and then for us to study and meditate on them, to accomplish them. So this then is why the second jewel is needed, the Dharma jewel. And what is the Dharma jewel? So the Dharma jewel is something that is generated within one's own individual continuum. And it comes about due to studying and contemplating and meditating on the teachings and giving rise within our own continuum. So those realizations that we achieve, these are the Dharma jewel. And in fact, to be even more specific, what the Dharma jewel actually is, because it's the Dharma jewel that is that liberates us from suffering, this is the true cessations and true paths. So in other words, the paths of an Arya being and the cessations of the afflictive minds that are achieved on the path. Those minds are the actual refuge, those minds are the Dharma refuge. So when you hear about the Dharma refuge, it's actually the generation of true cessations and true paths within our own continuum. And once we've reached such a state, and we're an Arya being, then birth in the lower realms and the like, this will not come about. And with the motivation of a bodhisattva, the attainment of our final goal, the goal of Buddhahood, is so very close. And then thirdly, that the jewel of the Sangha jewel. So the Sangha jewel are our companions on the path, and more so, or moreover, or in more detail, they are the Arya beings who are our companions on the path. So those are the three jewels: the Buddha, which is the teacher; the Dharma, which is the actual refuge; and the Sangha jewel, which are our companions on the path.
And in there. Dinigi conjusum, dinigi japsutu, that japsutu had, japsutu had, you japsum did that conjusum, but it is. Tis not dinigi japsutu had, that jap, then a jap de la yamazuke, nega japsia, tartu be japta, tartu be japsia, tartu, tartu, yamshut, to what they are should. That's Sanji Koronwa, Sanji, that's Sanji conjur, Sanji Koronche, Sanji Koron, you are eating a gordina landijerwa, the chair conjurwa. Dine, and then Sanjio Korong and a Gazarwa, Guinea Public Gazarwa, Gidun Gonja Chatter, Sanjio Korong, Gidun Gonjo, Sanjio was a nigger. Now Korong, you know, you go to Tenda, London, the Chukon Chatter. She's a Dikonjo somebody, Sanji Korong, you conjo somebody, that Tadu will get me. Dile Yahas Yoma, Tadu will get me. That the member of the Susu, when the same gender. Then a public gaza, your public gaza, the kidding of Jurama. No call the public gaza, coronal, you can the Gordon and Lamden, the Gisho on Jurama. And that Sanjo Gonjo, by that. Never and that the Kondota, public in the same day, you can Sanjay man can same gender, public gaza, the Gisho Gordon, the Lamden, the Gisho, never be jobs, never talk to your mother. The new Hoya to have more combat the door. Talk to you at the Saka, turn it up, Sanjay Gonjo.
So refuge can be divided into two, so temporary and ultimate refuge. So let's first look at what is meant by ultimate refuge. So an ultimate refuge is if we take the Buddha. So the Buddha is, of course, the Buddha jewel, and within the continuum of the Buddha are true cessations and two paths. So therefore, the Buddha himself is also the Dharma jewel. And then thirdly, the Buddha is an Arya being. Therefore, the Buddha himself is all three refuges. And therefore, and this is what is meant by the ultimate refuge. There is no higher, or there is no supreme refuge. Then the other one, I can't remember the English word so well, so maybe it's temporary refuge, maybe it's something else, I don't remember. So the other one, we'll call it temporary refuge, is if we take an Arya being, so now not a Buddha, an Arya being who's a non-Buddha, they are a Sangha jewel because they're an Arya being. Within their continuum, being an Arya being, they have true paths and true cessations because they are attained on the Arya grounds. So on the Arya paths. So an Arya being, they themselves are both the Sangha and the Dharma jewel. And this is then the temporary refuge. And this temporary refuge does not have a Buddha jewel.
Yeah. That in the that Jambu said the Jeshimbore, Mazo, Nambari, Mare said the Nek Gazako, Nambari, Kono, Mare said, Kabar said the Ganesi was in Jambu Hone. Gansa, did you learn Jambu Yola, Gazakora, Nambari, Elekor, Jambu Hone, Yoachi, Mado, Koduro, Kona, Ton, with them Juru, Ne, Dinigi Tonan, Nambada, and the Chigi Chandad. That been a issue, Sana, Kokachi, Sada, Ko Hindu, Sada, Ko Nabare, Kevachet, Dulo, Gonata, and Kevachet to Eomarwa, Dulo Ramara Kumuwa, and then to Subway China, Kevachet to Eomar. That got a Kevachi was in Jambogon, Kevachi, Jambogon.
What mark someone else, someone out as a Buddhist. It's not clothes that people wear, because amongst the world's religions, people wear a variety of different outfits. It's not the kind of face or expression that one has. Rather, it's whether one has gone for refuge to the three jewels or not. That is the deciding factor, or that's the boundary as to whether someone is a Buddhist or not, if they have gone for refuge to the three jewels. Therefore, refuge is very important. If we know someone who is a Christian, considers themselves a Christian, then such a person will see their God as being the supreme God, the supreme refuge, and seeing them as non-deceptive and the highest amongst any other potential refuges. And furthermore, such a person will train themselves in the religious doctrine through engaging in their own studies of the Bible and the like, and engaging in the practices that come together with this. It's the same with Muslims. They will see Allah as being the supreme refuge. There being no one higher than Allah in terms of protecting oneself, and Allah being non-deceptive. And they will train in the Quran, and they'll study the Quran and try and implement the teachings that are within the Quran. And for Hindus, it's the same. They will see their gods as being supreme, and they will train in the teachings of Hinduism. So for us as Buddhists, it's the same. We see the three jewels as being non-deceptive and as being the supreme refuge, in fact, the only refuge that can protect us from suffering and liberate us, in fact, from suffering. And amongst the three jewels, the Buddha is the ultimate refuge, because the Buddha himself is the Buddha jewel. Within the Buddha's continuum is the Dharma jewel. And the Buddha being an Arya being, the Buddha is also a Sangha jewel. So seeing how, understanding then what the three jewels are, we then commit ourselves to practice what they have taught, or practice the Dharma teachings itself, and cultivate the minds of the Dharma within our own continuum, so as to achieve actual Dharma paths within our own continuum. And that is the refuge of a Buddhist. And of course, there are those who don't accept any refuge or any creator God. So for them, they would be of the non-religious kind.
So, 다라다 미고 왕톱네 미토바이나 데네게 판도 제침 제네게 띵챵아챵 차도 띵자다 옐로티비 니바디도 건조스므로 요레 제나 데네게 두 삼다 당보도 삼단 거레스 데네 삼나도 잔당 다 데네게 제단 데네게 다 미리 류티네 톱네 가지고 심지어 탐지기래야 심지어 탐지기 돈달라 이 판바 두구레 제단 판바 두발라 다 심지어 탐지기 판바 두다 가네 두고레스네 Semjian Thamjian lai ngantu yu jela te je kol Thamadu tuya kakwa yuru wada mi chiki. Da na, lai di me na, anu gharja gora se na, anu kol ya ngantu ki ruang jen me na, anu gharja gora se na, kol ya chue she wu gora, da kol sangbu yu, kol senpa juwa tango, kol senpa sangbu yu chol ti gu gora, da chue shing gu gora, je zan chue she ne, chue she ba la su su chue shing gu gora wada, da su su chue shing na ya, anu,
All the bodhisattvas that exist, they were once before like ourselves. And being like ourselves, they knew that through the Dharma studies, they knew that they were only potentially one rebirth away from falling into the lower realms. Yet, having that knowledge, they also realized, had some understanding of suffering and their own suffering situation and the suffering situation of all sentient beings. And they had a wish for themselves and all sentient beings to be free of all forms of suffering. However, knowing that they are only a potentially one rebirth away from falling into the lower realms, then they took refuge in the Buddhas so as to ensure that they did not take such a rebirth, because if they were reborn in the lower realms, how could they be of benefit to others, because they would have been so dominated by suffering themselves. So with this understanding, They meditate on refuge, and they go for refuge to the three jewels, because it's only through going through the refuge in three jewels and thereby in particular developing the Dharma jewel that one can be of benefit to oneself and others. And then when these beings who are now bodhisattvas, then they would think about, so how can I be of benefit to others? I want to help others. I want to help others be relieved from their suffering situation. How can I do that? Well, on one hand, materially helping, this is useful and it's good to do, but that's of very limited benefit, certainly limited in terms of duration and in terms of freeing people from difficulty. Rather, people need to come to understand the Buddha Dharma, because through understanding the Buddha Dharma, what understanding the Buddha Dharma means is changing and developing one's way of thinking. And if I can help others change and develop their way of thinking, then I will be helping them in an ultimate term, in a long-term way. So this is a far greater gift to give to others. But to be able to help others in this way, I myself have to come to know the Dharma. Because if I don't know the Dharma well, how can I help others come to know the Dharma? So this train of thought the current bodhisattvas would have undergone when they were ordering beings like ourselves.
And
when these previous bodhisattvas, at this point in their meditation, they'll see the importance of coming to know the Dharma, because and train in the Dharma, because it's only if they know the Dharma can they help other beings in the way that beings really need to be helped, and that's through training them or teaching them how to train their own minds. However, the difficulty still remains. Even when someone comes to know the Dharma well, the people they want to help, the beings they want to interact with, have their own predispositions and interests and the like, and there's tremendous variety amongst beings in terms of how best to influence them. So this is something that's very difficult to know. Even if one understands the Dharma and has various clairvoyances and the like, it's still very difficult to know how best to relate to each individual being, especially on a more subtle level. And so if I don't have this ability, who does? And here the practitioner will think about that is actually a Buddha, and only a Buddha, a being whose mind is developed to the furthest capacity, who has the ability to help each being in accordance with their own individual predispositions. So understanding the tremendous benefit of attaining the state of omniscience, then the practitioner goes for refuge with a fervent wish to become a Buddha, and making the commitment to consistently engage in the trainings of a bodhisattva so as to attain the state of Buddhahood. So ourselves sitting here now, who have the aspiration to become bodhisattvas, who have the aspiration to enter the bodhisattva paths, it's with such a wish that we ourselves should go for refuge, and to become like the bodhisattvas and later the Buddhas, we need to train in the same way that they have.
And
actually, in the sutras of the Buddha, he himself said that someone who is a Dharma teacher, wherever they find themselves, it's imperative they come to know the language of that place, the language of the people, because it's only through knowing the language of the people amongst whom they live will they be able to benefit them in terms of their aspirations and predispositions. So I of course don't know much English, and I don't know you well, I don't know your habits and your likes and your predispositions, so it's a little difficult for me to benefit you in a great way. So all I really can do is share my thoughts and have the sincere hope and wish that there's a great benefit. To become like a bodhisattva, then we need to train in the practice of refuge. So within the practice of refuge are the precepts that need to be upheld. So these are also something that we need to train in.
That
Zambulin is having a chugumaris, chugumaris, jachimbore, chugumaris, and then Jina Jasu Chimbodi, and then Mandugi, Chige, Joe, Chunjo, Chigi, the Matic, as you know, to Iama, Tumor, Zinashi, and then Sunamki, jumps to Trivi, conscious on the Jeffs to Trivi, then Sunam Depe must be Jachimbushu, yes.
The merit that is accumulated from going for refuge is really immense and immeasurable. If the merit was to take form, it would be greater than the earth. Or if the merit that was accumulated could be likened to the droplets in the ocean, if it would even exceed the droplets in the ocean. If one has refuge and has gone for refuge, then one cannot be harmed by unseen beings such as malicious gods and spirits and the like. So these things aren't necessarily believed in the West, but certainly where I'm from and in Tibet and the like, these are believed in. But if one has refuge, then one will be protected from harm.
Having
gone for refuge, then whatever spiritual practice one engages in, that practice will be that much more powerful due to having gone for refuge.
Going
for refuge is the basis for which the basis upon which one can receive vows. So, for example, to receive lay vows or ordination vows, these are to receive them. One first requires the basis of refuge, and furthermore, refuge is the root that gives rise to the result of liberation and Buddhahood. And the precept relating to going to refuge to the Buddha is that when one goes for refuge to the Buddha, one doesn't also go to other gods for refuge. So before going for refuge to the Buddha, one should abandon any doubts that one has so that the faith becomes stable and reliable. Because when going for refuge to the Buddha, one accepts the precept of going to refuge only to the Buddha and not to other gods. And the precept relating to the Dharma Jewel, this is when one goes for refuge to the Dharma Jewel, one makes a commitment that one will abandon harming others, and in fact, one will abandon the harmful intent, so the, even the mind thinking to harm others. That too is to be abandoned, and this is the precept relating to the Dharma Jewel.
And
The precept relating to the Sangha jewel. So this is about not associating, not closely associating with non-Buddhists. The reason for this precept is as our refuge is not particularly strong, stable, or powerful, then if we spend time with others of a different philosophical view, they may be charismatic or persuasive and the like. And even if they don't mean to generate doubts in our mind, we may well end up being a bit confused and being deceived. And so whilst our refuge is still weak and not stable, then one should avoid closely associating with non-Buddhists.
Through having strong faith in the three jewels, we go for refuge to them. And going for refuge with the mind of strong faith leads us to want to train just like them, like the Buddha, like the Sangha, and to develop the actual Dharma refuge. So having this strong wish to become like them, to train like them, and to practice like them, we then engage with effort, and with joyous effort rather, with the mind that delights in virtue. We engage with joyous effort in our Dharma activities. And in this way, then our qualities grow and strengthen. And this is the process that leads us to the attainment of minds such as Karma Abiding, and certainly Bodhicitta, and entering the Bodhisattva paths. And as we progress, this mind of refuge will power us along the paths, so that we eventually come to realize our emptiness directly and become an Arya being ourselves. And when we become an Arya being, we are then a Sangha, an object of the Sangha jewel. And moreover, this realization that an Arya being has is this realization of the Dharma jewel. So we ourselves will become a Dharma jewel. So in this way, we can see how refuge is the root of all qualities. And it's through having a refuge, all our qualities will grow and eventually reach our final attainment, that of Buddhahood. So when, for example, we come together here in this teaching hall, we have the objects of the visual presentations or the basis of refuge here. So we usually will take refuge before them. The practice of refuge means that this mind of refuge that we generate in such a place is something we should take with us wherever. And if we don't have the physical objects with us,
Well, no matter. We should still have this mind of seeking refuge, of seeking protection from harm, and wanting to engage, to be like a Buddha. Because a Buddha, wherever a Buddha goes, a Buddha out of a mind of great love and compassion engages in enlightened activities to help others. So therefore, we can be sure that wherever we are, even if we don't have objects of refuge, we can still go to refuge and turn our mind towards the three jewels.
There's a story from Malaripa, when he was living in really extreme poverty. His food was very poor, his clothes were worn and ragged, and his situation was quite dire. And one day he went for a little walk around, and he was sitting quietly somewhere by himself, and someone approached him and started to talk to him, and said, "So, who are you? What are you doing here? Who are your friends? Who are you here with?" And so Malaripa replied, "Oh, I'm here with three friends." And so this person was amazed. He said, "But this is not true. You're here by yourself." And so Malaripa replied, "Wherever I go, I'm accompanied by the three jewels."
And also, when he was walking around in this rather disheveled state, an elderly lady saw him and generated compassion for this person who was in such a visually pitiful state. And she thought to herself, "Oh, in my next life, please may I not be like this person." And Malaripa, with his clairvoyance, said to her, "Lady, don't worry. I'm okay. I'm not in the state that you think I'm in." And she then realized that this person before her had clairvoyance. So she apologized and generated regret for that. And they developed a relationship, and she became his student and followed his teachings and practiced as he taught her. All Buddhas, Arya beings, and Bodhisattvas, they have clairvoyance. And with the power of the clairvoyance, they are aware of us and aware of our thoughts, our mental activity. So they may not be physically with us, but they are aware of us and aware of our thoughts.
And if we have a mind of faith and a mind of strong trust in them, then through this open mind, they will be able to help us and be there for us. And through having this mind of faith and trust in them, then our virtuous activities will lead to far greater merit being accumulated.
In the three sessions we've had this weekend, last night and today, we've looked at three more practices of the bodhisattvas. So recalling how all bodhisattvas, they were at one point ordinary beings just like ourselves, beings whose minds are dominated by the afflictions and who so easily become angry and enraged and the like. Even though they had such an ordinary and undeveloped mind, they went for refuge in a powerful way, in a refuge with great trust and faith in the three jewels. And going for refuge, then they applied or they practiced the precepts of refuge with great diligence. And in particular, we can think of the precept of refuge relating to the Dharma jewel, that of not harming others and giving up, and even giving up the mind of that is harmful towards others. So we've looked at this practice of refuge. We also looked at the need to separate ourselves or not closely associate with harmful friends, and especially the false teachers or unqualified teachers who can lead us to a mistaken path. Rather, we've seen the importance of associating with wholesome friends and people who, when we are with them, virtuous minds arise, and we are encouraged to engage in virtue and encouraged to abandon all harmful minds. And we've also heard about the need to rely on a spiritual friend, because through relying on a spiritual friend, we will give rise to the root of all the qualities that are attained on the Dharma path. So we've heard about these three practices, and us who want to become like a bodhisattva, we should practice in the same way that they have. And striving for Buddhahood, making efforts to progress with the development of these mental parts, knowing that when we come to attain that final goal of Buddhahood, then there are no more difficulties, there are no more problems. And in particular, being able to help others is something that is so much easier than it is for us right now with our limited, restricted ways.
That だから、そこはね、なんか、今、山木、ディバマンゴサジョヤンが、ハゴワヨラ、ハモワマンゴヨラバタ、ディネンさん、なんか、ディバディネチンスビスミルジャンソリタン、ハモワネディバパートメバサヨラ、ディチャザン、ヨジヨジェシャ、セビギョバシュチモチ、ギョバシサンタ、ヨジキヤ。だ、ギョバジェサインザ、チンチェネタ、ディネギディベリクシャラ、ネベリサワイン、ジギメア、センビギ、ダムジャスサンタ、ダムジャスチェ。 だでね、ダムじゃちんだ、だ、とんがけびにばでしゃすりよ、けびにこんじょすみゃけじょこんすんけ、だ、でね、ねじばでしゃぎんさんね。あね、でね、パジングにゃんねんでけじぎんさんべさんたんじゃ。でね、ディバシャギンさんでね。でね、あねせんじゃんじゅせんごんばいなら、ジャンバごんばいなら、にんじゅうごんばいなら。でね、だ、とんにいる、たわきも、とぅ、ちなんじゃ、だ、ジャンバロチ、にんじゅう、せんじゃんじゅうどんわら、ちゃん。
ね、たまにチャザーね、シディジョーナーさんビディネスサムジャージェ、アネクチェカジェクトゥドラチェ、チェカマカシチキニカジェクトゥムソチキ、ディセイパブディネスコム、ディネゴムデン、ニムチキテネチキ、ショベルチキチェルヴネディネチェ、アンジニングディワディセラバチコングウネ、アンディネゲ、アンジコンジョスメチャムレサムダ、アンディケ、ニアチキ、ディワディケセンディサムダ、ディネゲセンディチェチェイメセダムセンディケ、アンジョスメチェダ、 동아기분이버처럼서
Whatever activities we find ourselves doing throughout the day, whatever we are doing, it's imperative that we generate a good motivation, because if we, whatever we are engaging in, if we're doing this with a virtuous motivation, it becomes the cause for accumulating virtue and causes for enlightenment and to be of benefit to others. So whatever activity we engage in throughout the day, it's imperative to have a dharma motivation, a virtuous motivation present in our mind. So for example, when we go for refuge, then going for refuge, we should think about how the Buddhas how the three jewels can protect us from suffering. Through accomplishing the three jewels, we can be protected from suffering, and generating great faith and trust, we then go for refuge, but not just for our own benefit, but holding in mind the needs of all sentient beings. So we then go for refuge as an emissary for all sentient beings, on behalf of all sentient beings, for the benefit of all sentient beings. And so this way of thinking we can also use in other areas, in particular if we take our daily practice. So in our daily practice we should have a component relating to purification. So we should, and how this works is we should think about some of the negativities we know that we have accumulated in this life, and remind ourselves that these same negativities we have committed countless times in our previous lives as well. And not only that, there are a vast number that we now aren't even recalling that we too have done. So thinking about the negativities we've accumulated in the past, we should generate a powerful mind of regret. Thinking about the way I acted there will lead to a ripening result in the future that I don't want. It's a ripening result of suffering, and I don't want any more results such as that. And moreover, when I acted in that way, it was a way either directly or indirectly harmful to others. And I don't want to be that kind of person anymore, that directly or indirectly harms others.
So thinking like this, one generates a strong mind of regret. So this mind of regret now follows from the mind of refuge we were speaking about a moment ago. So we have this strong mind of regret for our past misdeeds, and seeing the faults of these misdeeds in terms of how they harm ourselves as well as how they harm others, we make the commitment that we will no longer be that kind of person. We will no longer be the person who acts in this kind of way and harms others directly or indirectly. So we make the commitment to turn away from such behavior, and accompanying that, we make the commitment to rather engage in virtuous activities such as the six perfections. So here we first started by generating the mind of refuge and doing this for the benefit of all sentient beings. Then we move to the second step, which is the mind of regret for the negativities we've done. And then thirdly, we've made the promise to turn away from such negativities and rather come to engaging in virtue. Then we come to the fourth step, and that's to apply an antidote. And the antidote is depending on whatever meets one's individual aspiration. So one can meditate on minds such as love, or generate the mind of compassion, or bodhicitta, or emptiness, etc. Or if one prefers, one can think about the suffering situation of all sentient beings, how all sentient beings want happiness and to be relieved of all forms of suffering. Think about the situation in the world, how all beings within the world only want to live in peace and do not want to live amongst any form of conflicts, whether it's between nations or between peoples or between individuals. All people want to be freed of such a situation. So thinking like this, one, of course, will purify a tremendous amount of non-virtue as well as accumulate a huge store of virtue, which, and both of these together lead to our progression, our mental progression, and our ability to help others also growing and strengthening. So for everyone here, depending on your own individual circumstances, if you can do this, engage in such a thought process once a day, then this is really fantastic to do, especially if it's done continuously, because then the change in one's mind will undoubtedly come about. For those whose circumstances allow, and they can do it, say, in the morning as well as at night, then that is even better, because the mental training will come about that much more quickly. And likewise, those who have more flexibility, perhaps they can even engage in such a meditation more often. And if not, if one can only maybe say do it once a day, then still during the day, during your activities, when you have a few moments here and there, take those few moments, remind yourself about your meditation that morning, remind yourself about the motivation that you set that morning. And if you can do that during the day, this will strengthen your minds further. So here, then lastly, in terms of the duration, then this is really down to each person. If you only have a few minutes in the morning, then that's great, as long as you can do something. And if you have more time, then even better. So now we've looked at a number of practices of the bodhisattvas, and we who aspire to be bodhisattvas, we should practice in the same way that they have.
All right, that's Emma.
This is, of course, our last session for this year. So thank you for your time here. Next year, when we meet in a couple of months, we'll start with the next verse on karma and its results and continue with the study on the practice of the bodhisattvas.
I guess a little bit touch, you should get what? family you been your man that you get tarn but bakare the chew mesa the nigga the one make you one long one give bachagi send them you won't get chasan the nigga chew go ahead go ahead send them you won't get over in dada then you carry the rubashana I don't know by shada jira so the rubba tarn in a zom jang chasan the zom jay take root in a churro jay and chew change your cobravati send them sabi get you would hit your だだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだだ
This opportunity that we all have here to hear the precious Buddha Dhamma and to have the time and opportunity to think about the meaning of that and develop these minds of the Dhamma, this is something that is uniquely rare and precious in this world. And that we have this opportunity, this didn't come about causelessly or just by luck. This has come about because we each individually in our previous lives created the necessary imprints in our minds. We created these necessary virtuous activities. And moreover, we made the appropriate prayers so that such a rare and special opportunity can actually be experienced now at this time. So this is something we should reflect on because it is very rare and incredibly precious and special. And we should rejoice in this because of how rare and difficult it is. And rejoicing in what we each have done individually and what each other have done, this not only makes our mind happy, but it generates virtue. So it's really a good practice to do. And then furthermore, me myself, I'm now somewhere very far from my place of birth. I left my place of birth quite young, and I'm really far from that now. And amongst you here, some of you have also travelled quite far and aren't from around here. And even those who are from Australia or the local area, many of you were born in into a country or a place that at that time the Buddha Dhamma wasn't really present. However, due to the causes that we have all accumulated, we have now managed to come together in this special opportunity, in this special environment, and in particular, we've come together with the opportunity to engage in Buddhist studies and studies of the Buddha Dhamma, and have the opportunity to cultivate these minds. So this all came about in dependence on the virtue that we have accumulated in past lives and the prayers that we have made. So this is something again to reflect on and really be joyful about. And so I have the hope that this relationship will continue, and when I will return from India, and we can continue our studies here in a couple of months' time. And just also to say that the relationship we have now, will be creating the causes to continue this relationship in the future as well. However, our relationships in the future won't necessarily be like they are right now. It's entirely conceivable that in the future, some of you will be teachers and I may well be your students. And likewise in past lives, it may well have been that way as well. So what can happen is dependent on the causes that are created now. So once again, generate great joy in what each of you as individuals and each other have done so as to achieve this wonderful opportunity that we have.
That's the
So the fact that I'm now sitting here on the throne and I'm teaching the Dharma, this is something that I'm, to be honest, I don't feel particularly proud of. It's nothing that generates pride in my mind, rather. Rather, I feel tremendous gratitude to all of you for having given me this opportunity to share what I have. So I want to say really a heartfelt thank you to everyone here. And in particular, I want to say thank you for everyone who's helped bring about the conditions that are required for all of us to be able to receive teachings. So we have, and everyone contributes in a variety of ways. So we have the Gyatso and the rest of the monks, such as Lundrup and Yeshi and Aljampa, who have helped create this monastic environment. Then we have those who have helped create the Dharma Center environment. So we have Ruby and all the other volunteers down at the Dharma Center. And then we have the SBC Andy and the others who help put together the teaching environment. So everyone contributes in so many different ways, and I don't really know what everyone does, but everyone does contribute in a number of ways, including coming to the teachings, contemplating on the teachings, and applying the teachings in their lives. So I just want to give a heartfelt thank you to everyone for giving me this opportunity and giving me this opportunity to accumulate great virtue. I really appreciate the kindness that you have shown. Furthermore, the conditions here in Australia are really quite amazing. And with these wonderful conditions, you are able to engage in Dharma studies without gross physical difficulties. And this is also something really to bear in mind, because sometimes in other situations, the physical difficulties can be such that one cannot, they serve to prevent one from engaging in the Dharma. Rather, what we have here are fantastic conditions in this country, and it's actually quite easy to engage in the Dharma. So, to take one example, Venerable Gyatso here in the front. So he, of course, as we know, he was a doctor before, and as a doctor he would have earned a good salary, and he would have had quite a good future mapped out before him. However, he turned away from all of that, and he developed the mind of abandoning the concerns of this life, and rather he chose to ordain rather than follow a medical career. And he then used the opportunity that came with that to engage in Dharma studies and meditation and the like. And moreover, he engaged in many beneficial activities for others, such as the physical work that we can see the results of, as well as teaching and leading retreats and the like. And this, to be honest, is something that I find very inspiring, and I really rejoice in the great benefit that Gyatso has brought to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And moreover, he's of course instrumental in the beautiful environment that he has created here, and not just created but maintains. And whoever comes to the monastery is always amazed and expresses just how beautiful the top of the hill is here. So through his hard work, great joy easily arises in the mind of others. So don't worry, I'm not going to talk too much about other individuals here. But it's fair to say that what's the work that so many other people have put into this community really is the reason why this community is as special as it is right now. So we have our monastic brothers here, such as Lundrup and Yeshe and Jampa, who all contribute to the monastery being sustained. And then down at the Dharma Center, we have Ruby and Andy and the rest of the community there who help sustain the Dharma Center and enable the Dharma Center to offer the potential to others to develop their minds and improve their lives. So this is really something that is quite fantastic, and we all should take great joy in the activities of others. So I've only mentioned a few people because I don't know what everyone does, but really you should be thinking about each of you, each and every one of you that is contributing in your own way. And for this I say thank you so much, and I ask that you generate joy in your own endeavors and the endeavors of others. And now when we come to dedicate, we should recall who really is at the basis of our opportunity here, and that is His Holiness and Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa, because it's only through their kindness that we have all of this here, that the wonderful, that the selfless work they've put in for so many years has enabled something that like this to come about. So therefore, when we dedicate now, we should pray that they have long and stable lives, and that all other genuine spiritual friends have long and stable lives, and that many obstacles to that are pacified, are overcome. And furthermore, the situation for all beings in the world is really quite pitiful, and for some the suffering is really pronounced. So here we should dedicate with the motivation that world peace comes about, that everyone experiences only a peaceful environment and peaceful interactions. And furthermore, in our prayers, we should pray that in the future we continue to have opportunity to meet holy beings such as His Holiness and Lama Zopa, and not just to meet them, but to receive their teachings. And again, not just to receive the teachings, but to apply those teachings, to meditate on these teachings. So we should make prayers that we continue to have such opportunities. Then furthermore, when we dedicate now, we should also have in our mind that all the various projects and activities of our Dharma Center and the monastery, that these are accomplished, and they're accomplished quickly. And furthermore, that all those who work and volunteer here, and everyone who's present, that all our own individual hopes and aspirations, that they are fulfilled in accordance with the Dharma as quickly as possible. So to make all these prayers now, this is something that's important to do. I've been here now almost 1 year, and I've really had a very happy year staying here. So I just want to thank you for that, and thank you for all of you who have each individually, you have all made my stay here possible. So I want to say thank you for that, and thank you for your help. I'm now returning to India, and there I will see my friends and my students, and I'm looking forward to seeing them. And when you have your festivals coming up, your Christmas and New Year and the like, I'll be thinking of you, and I hope that you have a happy New Year and a happy Christmas. And then over this 2 month period that we are apart, I hope everyone's health is good, and one's minds are happy, and that one's accumulation of virtue, one's application of the spiritual practice, this continues to be successful. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah.